Confession of Sins. Confess your trespasses to one another. James 5, verse 16. As Reformed people, we usually frown upon much that is done in the Roman Catholic Church. And one of the things we strongly reject in the Roman Church is the confessional. We do not want to have anything to do with it. One can sometimes even hear the observation among us that someone else, even when he comes in his ecclesiastical office, has nothing to do with our private life. Now, one should not exaggerate this phenomenon. It cannot be denied that there is a reserved attitude to much that concerns the discussion of intimate matters because of the more or less unsuitability and limited knowledge of psychological matters among us. However, he who is without sin in this matter should throw the first stone. The climate among us is often so unsuitable for an intimate discussion of spiritual experiences and experiential beliefs. And that is not because of the elder or minister. Neither is it a consequence of the absence of the old-fashioned conventicles. For faith that believes there is a communion of saints finds its proof in the wicked fruit of its absence. The spiritual apostasy of the one is never present without that of another. The complaint against the one is first of all an accusation against ourselves. And in the end, it is not possible to maintain spiritual intimacy in the face of regular meetings. No matter how well the intention was of the conventicle, it has done very little for the intimate speaking regarding spiritual life. It seemed to be compassionate, but was often more objective than the greatest slave of the letter, the most superficial minister about whom they complained. That minister could present an objective consideration about the work of Christ, but a conventicle often satisfied itself about a plain, objective, and often incorrect, consideration about the work of God in the Christian. It is actually the same as if I present a theory about the work of God for the soul, or a theory about the work of God in the soul. The question of whether one speaks objectively or subjectively in the end does not depend on the subject under discussion, but on the manner of the discussion. And since very little has been done about the study of psychiatry, the premise can be defended that true subjectivity has suffered most from the conventicles. For conventicles usually presented an objective, a very general and never purely personal discussion of that part of the objective doctrines of faith that spoke about the order of salvation. The manner of speech was revealing. It did not deal with I or you, but always with a he. That is the purest objectivity. One would have been able to say the things that were mentioned at the conventicles also at a regular examination. And many of the conventicle people wanted the slave of the letter to take their exams with them, in the wisdom passed on by them. Who is there that does not know how exactly those conventicle people always took the attitude of the man who supervised the exam? One can be a warm proponent of examinations and yet realize that there is no place for intimacy in the conventicles. Thus I return to Rome. If it is true that the elderly and the young people, the leaders and those who are led, the scriptural and the casual Christians, the experiential and the joyful ones, the exact and the flexible ones among and also around us, have, when it comes to the point, very little of the true and faithful intimacy in spiritual matters, do we then have the right to heartily condemn Rome as long as we do not replace it with something better? Oh no, we are not for one moment considering a defense of the Popish confessional. But neither will we ignore the fact that our major objection to the Roman Catholic confessional is often only a theory for us. In practice, we have very little to also experience it. For we contend against Rome that a layperson should not confess his sins to a priest, because the hierarchical line deprives the congregation of Christ of the rights of believers. But when we place over against this the fact that members of the church have the right of mutual maturity amongst each other, we do not see much fruit in this matter. We say that the laity should not confess to the priest, but the believer should confess his wickedness to a believer. But what is the reality? How often do we allow each other to read into the depth of our souls? How often is it our own fault that people judge us wrongly because we never allowed another to look into our souls with its hidden struggles and difficulties? We should not just protest against Rome, but reveal our practice over against them. Nobody will advocate here the eagerness by which some people relate their tales of sin, which will not benefit anyone. But is there no inner chamber behind our salons? Is there no possibility to have an environment of rest and trust? Would there not open up for us a wealth of spiritual communication, of a true and faithful fellowship for us, if we would show each other more of the difficulty to live as a Christian, how hard it is to obey even a little of Christ's enormous demands? When we speak about the communion of saints, we first remember how many patrons, who also belong to the church, bypass our door. But who is wondering about what he himself has done to heal languishing souls from their self-afflicted rationing? When we want to practice intimacy, we usually think of only one thing, the prayer chamber. But let us make room for another chamber, the chamber of mutual interaction for the children of God, who, without showing off, come together at set times and appointed places around an authoritative bench of confession, where we, in pure simplicity, serve each other by discussing the struggles of simple souls who have sought their Father, and tell each other how difficult it is to understand that Father, and greet Him with the love by which He has loved us first. Their honest exchange of the consciousness of guilt will soon drive them with a sense of fellowship to that Father, who also grants us the blessings of true and faithful communion in those moments of the most personal communication. So then it is also the only way to have faith in heaven. And as long as we are not yet there, we may also in this matter exercise ourselves in the practice of godliness. For with powerful words, thundering pulpits, and Protestant arguments, we cannot free ourselves from these words of James, the servant of the Lord, "Confess your trespasses to one another."